It's Conrad here again, in autobiographical mode at the request of friends, and this chapter could be called How I Got Involved with Southeast Asia. But first, here's Freddy Aguilar singing the Filipino patriotic song Bayan Ko.
Ang bayan kong Pilipinas, lupain ng ginto't bulaklak, pag-ibig na sa kanyang pala, nag-alay ng ganda't dilat, at sa kanyang yumi at ganda, dayuhan ay naadina. Bayan ko, biniyag ka, nasadlak sa dusa.
My country, the Philippines, for your refinement and beauty, foreigners were enticed. You were enslaved and mired in suffering. That song was originally written by José Alejandrino, a revolutionary nationalist general in the unsuccessful Philippine War for Independence from the American annexation of 1899. I'm starting this part of my life story with this song because, and not many people know this, my long and life-changing association with Southeast Asia was due to one outstanding Filipina who is no longer amongst us, the radical scholar and campaigner Luz Verminda Francisco. Now, although the Vietnam War was raging while I was at school, I think I must have been doing my O-levels at the time of the Tet Offensive, I really didn't know much then about Southeast Asia. If memory serves, I first became concerned reading Rachel Carson's book Silent Spring, where I learned of the devastation caused in Vietnam by the American defoliation campaign using Agent Orange, manufactured by Monsanto and Dow Chemical. I went to university in Glasgow, and somehow I got involved with the student Christian movement, for I still identified as a Christian in those days. The SCM was then in a very radical phase, aligned to liberation theology and struggles for social justice. They funded the Europe Third World Research Centre in a basement in Gower Street in London. And when I joined the SCM, the director of ETWRC was Chinhamo Chimutengwende, whom I now understand to be very close to Robert Mugabe and the Zimbabwe government. Indeed, he's rumoured to be the author of the infamous 1979 Grand Plan document, the ZANU plot to subjugate Joshua Nkomo's supporters amongst the Ndebele people. Not a nice man at all. However, in the early 70s, the SCM replaced Chen as the director of the research centre with a fierce little Filipino woman called Luz Verminda Bartolome Francisco. I became very fond of Fiery Luz, her laid-back American husband Jonathan Fast, and their bright young daughter Lenora. Luz Verminda is a very patriotic Filipino name. It's made up from bits of Luzon, the Visayas, and Mindanao, the three main island groups. Luz came from a committed left nationalist family, which had been involved in the resistance to American annexation and occupation of the Philippines, and also the Japanese attempt to do the same in World War II. Luz Verminda's trade was as a historian and scholar. The same was true of her husband, John, who at the time was working on a PhD thesis demonstrating in great detail how US agribusiness interests were instrumental in lobbying for the Spanish-American War, which led to the American annexation of Puerto Rico, Guam, the Philippines, and later Hawaii. Now, if I may mention a few publications, John's 1973 book is The Philippines, End of an Illness, End of an Illusion. In the same year, Luz published a major article, which you can still find on the web, called The First Vietnam, the U.S.-Philippine War of 1899. They tried to make people aware of the largely suppressed and ignored facts about this very dark episode in American foreign interventions, where rebels and civilians were interned in concentration camps, subjected to water torture, and sometimes massacred, in the name of what President McKinley considered America's manifest destiny, setting an ugly pattern. Now, John and Luz were the joint authors in 1985 of Conspiracy for Empire, Big Business, Corruption and the Politics of Imperialism in America, 1876-1907. They were both active in the Association for Radical East Asian Studies and on the board of the Journal of Contemporary Asia, which published articles from such people as Malcolm Caldwell, Gabriel Kolko, Noam Chomsky, Hamza Alavi, John Gittings, John Halliday, and the like. The JCA's board once met in John Luce's little Clapham flat, and their daughter Lenora, who is quite talented in that line, did caricatures of them all, with Jean Chesneau expostulating, "It is bourgeois to use footnotes." Luce cultivated friendships with the Filipina nurses, lab technicians and cleaners at University College Hospital in London. I remember at least one anarchic dinner party at the Clapham flat with the girls resident at Bonham Carter House in Gower Street. My job was to make the salad. In 1975, Luce asked if I would come to London and help her with organising an event called the Southeast Asia Weekend. She'd seen my way of lettering with tempo permanent markers, and that was going to be a quick and cheap and effective way to add captions to an extensive exhibition of photos and documents that would be at the event. The Southeast Asia Weekend was a co-production of the Europe Third World Research Centre and the Association of Radical East Asian Studies, and it was designed to highlight the struggles of the people of the region for democracy, freedom, justice and self-determination. We held it on Friday the 16th and Saturday the 17th of May 1975 in the Collegiate Theatre in Gordon Street near University College London. These days it's called the Bloomsbury Theatre. Something like 600 people showed up. I think the fact that the Vietnamese revolutionaries had finally taken Saigon a fortnight before just might have had something to do with the public interest. For me personally, the significance was all the new friends I made. People with whom I was to work for years to come, such as Peggy Duff, who had led the CND marches to Aldermaston, Malcolm Caldwell, the SOAS lecturer who was later murdered in Phnom Penh shortly after meeting Pol Pot, his colleague Andrew Turton, who's an anthropologist specialising in Thailand, Carmel Budiarjo, who founded the TAPOL campaign for political prisoners in General Suharto's jails in Indonesia, and many more. Later that year, Luce asked me to join ETWRC as her assistant. There was very little money, but the SCM had a vacant house in Golders Green, formerly occupied by their employee, the Malaysian barrister and protest poet Cecil Rajendra, which needed counter-squatting to protect it. So I could live there for free and work in Gower Street. One weekend, some Malaysian and Singaporean friends came to my door and asked if a couple that they called George and Linda could stay in the house for a month or two. They're nice people. I learned quite a lot about Chinese-style cooking from them. As we sat in the lovely but ragged garden one fine evening, George quizzed me about how much I knew about contemporary Singaporean politics. "Well," I said, "I had been reading about the Lee Kuan Yew government's face-off with the University of Singapore Students' Union and how the student leader, Tan Wah Piao, had been sent to jail." "Oh," said George, "they say he was released from prison and was going to be immediately drafted into the army, but he escaped across the straits into Malaysia. In fact, he's now in the UK," he said. "In fact, I am Tan Wah Piao." So that's how I came to be living with political refugee Tan Wah Piao and Chu Beng Lan, and lovely house guests they were too. Some of my work for Luz was to do with preparing publications for print. And this became a big focus after Indonesia invaded East Timor in December 1975. In 1976, with the assistance of the Journal of Contemporary Asia Folks, an international conference was held in Bonn, which I attended. And I stayed on in Freiburg for a week afterwards with the German Osttimor Solidaritätskomitee, which was part made up of radical Indonesian students. We toured around campuses in a Volkswagen camper van, the Volksbus, and played several concerts of East Timorese music, with me on flute, of course. We also formed a British campaign for independent East Timor, of which I was the newsletter editor, and we got a special request one time from José Ramos Horta, who would later be president of East Timor and a Nobel Peace Prize winner. José had left East Timor just 3 days before the Indonesian invasion with a brief to plead the Timorese people's case before the United Nations. Stranded abroad, he became the Fretilin movement's international representative and foreign minister. "The problem," said José, "was that nobody at the UN had a clue where East Timor was, and there were no maps extant, partly because the Portuguese government had declared maps of the territory to be a state secret, of all things." But I had a reader's card to the library of the London School of Oriental and African Studies, and I knew there was a very detailed, large, one-sheet map of East Timor in the SOAS basement. So my job was to take 6 large sheets of frosted polyester drafting film into the map room, get that map on the light table, and over the course of a week or maybe longer, trace off pre-separated 6-colour artwork with the relief marked at 500-metre intervals, and I can tell you East Timor is very mountainous, and the location and name of several hundred villages. Given the diagonal shape of the island mass of Timor, there was also room, bottom right, for a regional map, plus a map of land use and other economic data. The artwork got finalised back home at Golders Green, which involved endless, endless hours of applying sticky-backed Letratone tint films to the polyester, and then trimming it back with a number 11 scalpel blade. Meanwhile, we were being visited by 3 of the comrades from Germany. Lala, the Indonesian girl, was very attractive, I must say. And Detlev, who is a printing apprentice, and his job it would be to convert my artwork into printing plates and run them on a Heidelberg printing press. Well, I made the deadline of Detlev's departure by working with Letratone shading the whole night. Then I remember the following day, Wapiao, Benglan, Lala Sujanaputra, her cousin, and I, we all went to London Zoo. Thanks to me having had my nose just a few inches away from all that Letratone, I can tell you it wasn't only the leopards that were covered with spots. Everything I looked at was covered with spots. During 1976, one of Luz's major preoccupations was the worsening political climate in Thailand. The Prime Minister of the day was Seni Pramut of the Democrat Party. But the Thai right wing were fomenting unrest against the government and especially against the liberal students and academics. It looked like a coup was on the cards, and sadly, on 6th of October 1976, it proved to be the case when elements of the army and the right wing village scouts movement stormed the campus of Thammasat University, and many students were shot or lynched and their bodies set on fire, and about 5,000 were detained without trial. But before that horrible day, Dr. Pue Ung Pakorn, the rector of Thammasat University, like Prime Minister Seni Pramut, he'd been active in the anti-Japanese Free Thai movement during the war. Indeed, he'd been trained by the British Special Operations Executive and parachuted back into Thailand as an anti-Japanese agent. Dr. Pue came to England on a speaking tour, which Luz organised. That helped to rally a network of democratic Thais abroad and their Western friends, which was to prove significant in the years to come following the coup. At the time, I was on the point of leaving Luz Verminder's employ because we'd been unable to raise funds to continue my post, and I moved to Oxford to work for the student anti-poverty campaign, Third World First, for 3 years. But I did become a good friend of Dr. Pue's 3 sons, John, Jai, and Maitri, or John, Giles, and Peter, to give them their English names, because indeed their mother, Jan Pue's wife, Margaret Smith, was an Englishwoman. In fact, it was Jai Ung Pakorn who became my Thai language teacher, bless him. It was quite tough learning Thai, because I'm not a natural linguist. Thai is a tonal language like Chinese, and of course it's got a completely different writing system based on Sanskrit consonants. And Jai insisted I must learn to read and write Thai and use the dictionary, not just speak it. Thereafter, in Oxford, I lost touch with Luz Francisco, but I was working more and more with Thai friends and the Ad Hoc Group for Democracy in Thailand, and indeed I spent a few months in Thailand in 1979. Even later, in the early 1980s, back in London, I got to know a couple of young Thai ladies, Yi and her sister, Noi. My Thai friend Tanya Ponanan married Yi, and later I married Noi. Noi and I joined the Inside Asia magazine Workers' Cooperative as their print production people, and we also inherited from Tanya and Yi responsibility for publishing the Thai community magazine they had founded, Thai Europe, for which we used a big bilingual Thai-English daisy wheel typewriter. That is, until in 1985, Noi and I met Desktop Publishing at the Repro 85 print exhibition at Olympia. But that, my friends, is a whole different set of stories from my life. And that will have to wait. So in memory of Luz Verminder Francisco, who affected the course of my life in unexpected ways and was an inspirational boss, I will leave you with Freddie Aguilar singing the chorus of Bayan Colt.
Ng lu